I'm very happy now to welcome Peter Sarkisian. He is an artist, and his show at the New Mexico Museum of Art is called Peter Sarkisian Video Works 1994 to 2011. And Laura Addison joins us. She's the curator of contemporary art at the New Mexico Museum of Art. Welcome both of you to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So this is a really fun and interesting show of, what do you call them, video sculptures, video installations?
Yeah, both of those terms apply in my case. You know, I come from a film background. I spent a number of years in L.A. And early to mid-90s, I crossed over and I started to use video in a sort of hybrid form, merging it with sculpture to create a new kind of work.
When you say you have a film background, what were you doing? You were a cinematographer?
I was a directing fellow at the American Film Institute, and prior to that I was at CalArts, and then after AFI I was working in the industry directing projects, and I escaped Los Angeles and returned to New Mexico, and in I believe 1993 or 4, a group of local artists were organizing an exhibition. Zane Fisher was among them, Zoe Nauman, and a few others, and they asked me to get involved because they had seen some of the work that I had been producing, short films while I was writing. And I was raised by artists, so I, you know, had an idea what that would entail, and I just jumped in. It seemed exciting at the time, and I produced a series of works, and from there I got a gallery here in New Mexico. Linda Durham picked me up, and then from there I had my first show in New York at a gallery, and then former director of Site Santa Fe, Luis Grachos, came to the studio and offered me a show right then and there at Site. And then it's just, here I am 20 years later.
This is a traveling show. It's been going all over the country, I think, and this is its last stop.
It is. It was organized by Susan Moldenauer at the University of Wyoming Art Museum. And it was put together as a traveling exhibition, so it debuted there, and then it traveled to the Knoxville Museum of Art and the Jordan Schnitzer Museum of Art in Oregon, and then it went overseas to the Taiwan National Museum of Art in Taiwan. Then it came back and went to the Scottsdale Museum of Contemporary Art, and then it was supposed to end there, and then Laura got
wind of it from
got
somewhere.
Got wind of it, yeah, and called me up and pitched it to me, and that's why we're here.
And expanded it out.
And we expanded it because we had the benefit of having a number of collectors who live here who have Peter's work. And also, since the show has been traveling for a couple of years, there's newer works that he didn't have the opportunity to show in the other venues that we included here. And the one of those three pieces that he made in that 1994 show, mm-hmm, that was here, the first time he did those works, one of those pieces is in this show at the museum.
It's interesting because as I was looking at it, I was thinking that this bears as much resemblance to super realist painting as it does to film, in the sense that there's a sense of you can reach out and touch it, and mm-hmm, is this real or is it a projection? And it turns out mostly to be a projection. Mm-hmm. For example, there's the first piece I saw when I walked in was what looks like a bucket with liquid dripping into it, and you hear the drops, but it's actually a projection of that, mm-hmm, liquid. And so there's a lot of playing with what's real and what's the illusion of reality.
Yeah, and I'm trying to blur that line, obviously. I mean, as a filmmaker, I always felt like I was sort of fighting the confines of the frame, trying to work against frame, because I think frame is a very telling characteristic of the medium. Any movie, television, video games, they all work within the confines of a frame.
A rectangle.
And what that does is it denotes the point at which the medium begins and ends. So you just understand that anything that falls within that frame is a reference. It's a referential image, and it's been mediated to you from another time and place. And so by eliminating frame, I'm able to bring the images into the present and confuse the viewer, really. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to create perceptual traps for the viewer. So they walk up to something, and it's part tactile experience and part visual experience, and they don't know where those two things meet, and so they're forced to ask a very simple question, which is, what is my experience at this moment? And that's significant to me because I use video. I'm an artist that uses this medium that is used internationally in a ubiquitous commercial way that sort of kills experience. Everywhere we look, we stare at screens, and our real experience is just sitting and staring, but there's no experience inherent in that process beyond that. And the problem with that, I think, is that there's an element within experience that we need to grow, and that's consequence. we go out in the world, we engage in the world, we have experiences in the world, we take action, and we're met with reaction. And that teaches us how to behave, how to get along, how to coexist. And we don't learn that lesson by staring at images. We learn the information that points to experience and it points to consequence, but the consequence is not there. And so,
is it there in your work? Let's say I go and interact with that pail with the thing dripping into it.
Well, just by not knowing what it is, by scratching your head, by moving around, you become active in the process of watching. You're still watching video. You're still watching a form of TV in a way, but you're involved. It matters where you are, what's happening, your relationship. All those things matter. And so essentially what I'm trying to do is transform the experience-killing medium of TV into an experience-creating medium.
I was just reading somewhere, and I cannot remember where, that when little children are acquiring language, they can learn language from adults, but they can't learn language in the same way from screens.
Mm-hmm.
And so the parts of their head that light up when an adult is saying the words to them do not light up in the same way when a screen is saying those same words to them.
And I would argue that the same goes for anything that we witness on the screen. You know, experience can't make it onto the camera. It can't make it onto the recorded medium. It can't make it to the viewer. Information is great. And video, to the extent that it helps us learn, is a great medium. But the problem is that it's being used by commercial outlets to sort of seduce us into just this stasis. And it's not enough. And as an artist, it's so important to use the medium in a way that talks about itself. So in a sense, being able to reach into the medium and use it against itself, I think adds another dimension. And if I was a painter, it would be very hard to argue that I'm painting about paint. You know, the social, geopolitical undertones of paint and how it affects our psyche. Paint is really not that interesting. I mean,
although generations of abstract artists did exactly that.
Well, okay, yes, but I don't know. I think that's sort of a spent discussion.
Indeed.
And right now we're at the height of that discussion with regards to video and what it's doing. By saying paint is not that interesting, I'm certainly not trying to sort of minimize the topical interest that artists who use paint explore, because they bring the topical interest to the medium. But I have this great opportunity, and other artists that use video have this opportunity to sort of fold it back on itself. And it is at play in the world in a very significant way. And so there, you don't really have to look anywhere else. You just kind of look at the medium. And so that's why what I'm trying to do is climb inside the medium and turn it around and drive it headlong into the viewer in a way.
We're talking to Peter Sarkisian, whose work is at the New Mexico Museum of Art. It's also interesting to me, I mean, you've been doing this work since the mid-90s, and the medium of film and video, have changed so much. And this is something we talked about years ago when Stana Veselka was on this program, because she's been doing video since the beginning of video. And, I mean, if you do oil paints are the same now as they've been for centuries, but video is changing, not just within a lifetime, it's changing every year.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I was in film school, there was experimental film. There was such a thing as experimental film. And then a big change, Stan Brakhage and Ed M. Schwiller and others were using this medium in a way that merged the classical filmic approach with the artist approach. And it meant something. And MTV came along and sort of appropriated those sensibilities and sort of let loose all these young creative people on the medium in a commercial sort of context. And it killed experimental film to a certain degree, because everything that was so precious and rare about these people working outside of the mainstream in Hollywood was suddenly being co-opted and they're sort of being exploited. And then, you know, artists like Woody and Stana and Bill Viola and Nam June Paik and artists like that came into the scene, and they picked up where those experimental filmmakers had sort of left off in a way, I think. And then we had this other transition. So now I came along in the mid-90s and artists like Tony Oersler and other contemporaries of mine. And, you know, when we first started showing or when I got to the scene, I was showing art and I was engaged in more arguments with viewers who just couldn't understand why I was using video in this way. What's the difference between what you're doing here in the gallery and what's being done, what I have on my kitchen table?
What do you mean? Like what?
Well, people weren't used to video or TV in a museum context or in the gallery. Even though those other pioneer artists had been doing it for so long, it was such a rarefied, exclusive group, and really no one ever got to see it except people that really sought it out. So that when it started to become very mainstream, something that you'd see all the time in museums or galleries, and this happened from the mid-90s to the late 90s and thereafter, it was a hot topic. And it was tensions really high in the gallery space. And I remember engaging with a lot of viewers and trying to justify what I was doing and why I was doing it and why was I bringing, you know, TV into a gallery or a museum. And then, of course, got me to, I started thinking about why I was doing this. And that led to where I'm at now in terms of, you know, all these years later, sort of really trying to, again, transform this medium from this experience, this experientially void tool, and turn it into something that's rich with experience, or at least touches upon experience for the viewer.
I mean, it seems to me that what film and TV have is they have narratives, and you are not doing narratives. And so you put on a television show or you go to a movie to see somebody tell a story. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of visual richness and linguistic richness to it if it's any good. Mm-hmm. But it's just a different medium.
I actually think you're using narrative more than a lot of video artists do, and I think that holds a lot of appeal to our audience. And I think that one of the things that he does so interestingly is, and he's not alone in doing this, but he is actually rethinking his relationship to the viewer. I think that video provides a really great platform for that. You mentioned MTV, and so every generation of youth has a different sort of milestone in terms of this technology. So, like, I was a generation of Sesame Street, and although I also remember seeing the very first video of that was on MTV. You probably
do,
Peter.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I noted that I should have anticipated, but that I hadn't, was at the opening last Friday. There were lots of kids there, and they were completely engaged. It was easy for them to understand the language of illusion. They intuited it. It really brought them in a way that was much more, as you say, active than just if they were holding a handheld video game.
Well, yeah, one of the reasons I think for that is because we understand the language. Anything that moves and changes on a screen, we get. And so even though I'm kind of blurring that line, it functions on that level, and I think people get that. And that also, you know, applies to anything that moves in the world, anything that's not inanimate, we can relate to in a way, I think, as sort of, we identify with it as a moving, changing element. And film, whether it's a variation of it, whether it's TV, or regardless of what medium is being used, light on surface, moving images based on light on surface, have this access to this keyhole within our subconscious, I think, because it moves and it changes and it evolves. So you walk into a room and you grow and change over the course of your viewing experience, but the work does also. And that brings it closer to us, I think, in a way. But with regards to narrative, I also agree. I think I do think about narrative. But having come from a film background, I was trained to juggle. And so that's what writing stories and telling stories is really all about. You're just juggling. You're juggling many different components, many different perspectives, many, you know, different variables, and you're telling a story, the best possible story you can, while juggling those elements. So as a filmmaker, for example, you're juggling light, you're juggling angle, location, character, wardrobe, dialogue, action, movement, all these things. I feel like what I'm doing now is I'm stripping away. So rather than adding on layers, I'm taking layers away, and I'm focusing on just that one, like almost tossing a ball up, one ball, I'm trying to toss it as well as I can. And so these are sort of reductions. They're narrative reductions as opposed to complex, interwoven narrative, you know, tapestries.
Stories.
Yeah. But there are still story. There's still story there. There's story in a number of the works, like the figure crawling out of the ink, you know, is telling a story. You know. And
yeah, but I mean, to the extent that there are stories, you kind of have to, the viewer has to make up what the story is.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's... I make a point not to hit anyone over the head. I'm not didactic in any way or form. I kind of feel, because of the nature of the viewing environment, which is dark and private and intimate, that the work is best left alone, and the audience can fall into the work rather than the work sort of make a point. And this brings me to one other topic, which is the difference between questions and answers in work, whether it's film or TV or you know, art. I really try to pose more questions than I do provide answers. In fact, I try not to provide any answers.
What are some examples of the questions in this show?
Well, the most basic is an experiential question. What's my relationship to this object? What is it I'm looking at? Is it physical? Is it not? I mean, you said at the beginning of the interview here that these installations are mostly image, but in fact they're hybrid, and they're almost as much object as they are image. But blurring that line poses a very fundamental question to the viewer. And then within each piece, you know, there's nothing in the show that really explains itself. And there's no work that I do that really spells everything out. The work that I did in the back, in the second room, titled Pounding Study, which is this plate of steel on the wall that looks as though it's being buckled from the back while you hear this clashing sound, like somebody's on the other side of it with a sledgehammer trying to get at you. Well, who is that? Why are they trying to get at me? What's the artist trying to say here? I think that questions are eternal. They go on and on and on and on. They never die. Answers, just, they're gone before you know it. As soon as you answer them, they're dead. And then what you find is there are questions left in its place. And so, as an artist, I'm interested in exploring my own questions, and I'm banking that the viewer is more interested in exploring those questions than being given answers by
somebody.
Well,
one of the things that's fun is, I mean, whatever the piece is, there's a projector, there's an object, and I would say that on more than not, I had to put my hand in between the light and the mm-hmm. thing that it was being projected onto to figure out what mm-hmm. part of it was real. And you can, because of the way the shadow of your hand works on the piece. But that does make it fun, and I can see how kids are also intrigued by it.
Yeah.
You know, you said something as you were guiding people through the show the other day that essentially was that the work is really deceptively simple, that it's actually more complex than it looks. Mm-hmm. And I think that you meant that in terms of the technology and how hard it was to accomplish what it is that people see. But I think that also sometimes those narratives, there's a piece that's called Book, and it's an image of a dictionary, and it's
with Peter crawling
into the spine and then correcting the dictionary. And so I think there's a very simple narrative to that, a very sort of one right on the surface, but I think it actually, if you spend more time with it and actually watch the whole thing, there's myriad interpretations you can make of it.
Yeah.
And so I think that that is part of the relationship being built with the viewer, and that it's more complex than it seems.
Yeah. And also, the more simple the work is, or seemingly simple, the more complex it is to make it work, because you're not hiding behind anything. It's right there in front of you. And the dripping piece that you're referring to, the puddle on the floor, as simple as that is, I think it's more complex psychologically for the viewer than even really the book piece, because the book piece, you kind of get its narrative. But the puddle functions on this perceptual level that, again, blurs that line and creates this perceptual trap. And it's hard to do that. And also, the smaller works are much harder to produce.
Technically, you mean?
Well, every inch that you see on a small work represents 5 feet in the real world. For example, there's a piece with a man floating in a 1940s or 50s suit, face down in his coffee.
Right.
So you have this coffee cup, and you look down into the coffee cup, and you see this deceased person floating face down in his coffee. I can't tell you when I went through to shoot that. It was middle of winter. I was all alone. I had to build a swimming pool out of 60 bales of hay and plastic and plywood. And then I had to tint it, and I had a 30-foot scaffold built next to it, and I was running up and down the scaffold in the middle of the night, 2 o'clock in the morning, by myself, turning the camera on, turning it off, freezing, hypothermic. So the smaller they are, the more difficult they really are.
Yeah, and just, I mean, as we were saying before, being able to bring your own imagination and your own experience to each one of these pieces, like the piece of the liquid dripping on the floor, the liquid going down the drain, those made me think about surface tension, an experience of seeing what different liquids look like when they fall on a surface, and different liquids behave differently. And you just think about that when you're looking at that.
And you also have to think about it when you're making it. So that was done in 2000, and I don't know really what I was using. I think it was a tinted water, but I obviously experimented with a lot of different liquids to get that right surface tension.
I have to ask you, do you at this point watch television or movies at all?
Not much. I have a 7-year-old. And, of course, TV has a place in our household. But not during the week, only on the weekends. So we're pretty good about it. You know, I have to kind of practice what I preach. I can't really be a couch potato and be sort of this, you know, championing this idea of video. sort of robbing us of our vitality and our experience. So I certainly want to see my son experience what his friends do and understand what TV's about, but there's a lot of R&D that goes into that. So, for example, if we're watching a movie, we'll always first watch the 90-minute making of, how these movies are made, who they are, who wrote this. You know.
So you watch the making of before you actually watch the movie?
Absolutely, yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And I think and we started doing that at a very young age, and he gets it, I think, I hope.
Yeah, I mean, it actually did make me think about the whole media literacy movement, because once you learn how, for example, ads on TV are made that are trying to manipulate you,
yeah.
They no longer manipulate you.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they probably still do on some level.
Yeah, if they're really well done.
But you're right. But it's a lot of work to do that, to be a viewer that is that sort of aware of themselves in this sort of self-aware state. Because what those things do, first and foremost, and this all started in Hollywood. It started with Spielberg and a lot of those guys. It actually started far before that, but really the blockbuster trend started in the late 70s with all of those big pictures like Jaws and Star Wars. But, I mean, we sit and we stare, and the last thing anybody wants you to do is sort of pull out of that state.
Exactly.
And that's the first thing I want you to do. And that's a big difference. I don't want you to slip into that state where you're not self-aware.
It's interesting that you mentioned the photorealist painting, because Peter's father works in that vein. And it's now there's a piece by his father up in a different show in the museum. And I think that's an interesting thing to actually talk about.
Yeah, actually, it's quite amazing that you brought that up, because my father was, throughout the late 70s and throughout the 80s, was considered one of the great American realist painters. You know, he showed in practically every major museum in the country and abroad as well. And he worked in this way that, again, blurred that line.
Yeah.
And I really never have thought about that all that much, but certainly it warrants further introspection, because it's definitely there. There's a connection. Mm-hmm.
You're both trompe-l'oeil artists.
I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, the show is called Peter Sarkisian Video Works 1994 to 2011. It's at the New Mexico Museum of Art, where Laura Addison is the curator of contemporary art. So I guess there are some lectures and events coming up.
Yes, this Friday, Linda Durham is going to be speaking at the museum. It's a free event at 5:30, and it's called Wonderlust, as opposed to Wanderlust.
Yes.
Wonderlust, Linda Durham's 30 Fearless Years in the Art World.
Awesome.
And that's, again, 5:30 in St. Francis Auditorium at the museum, and it's free. And then on June 28th, also at 5:30, and that's a Friday, a free Friday evening also, Peter Sarkisian is going to be giving a lecture. And I think it's actually the first time you've ever lectured here, isn't it?
No.
No. Say yes.
The second time. I did a talk for the students of the University of Art and Design.
So this is the first public lecture?
Yes.
Okay.
Excellent.
Don't miss it. Free, 5:30, June 28th.
28th of June. Mm-hmm. Excellent. I want to thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe. How long is this show going to be running?
The show runs through August 18th.
Well, thanks for being with us.
And thank you for having us.
I'd like now to welcome Rob DeWalt. He is with the Pasatiempo, Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe, New Mexican. He's with us many Fridays speaking of the arts. Welcome.
Good morning. It's been a while.
Yes, and it's a very early sunny morning.
Very early. I was up at 6.
Really?
So, yeah.
I was up at 7:45.
How do you, make it here and, still look okay? I got up 2 hours ago, and I feel like The Walking Dead.
Yeah, it's all illusions, the way we look on the radio.
Indeed.
So lots of things that are happening this weekend.
Lots of things are happening this weekend.
Can I start?
You can start. Of course.
This Saturday, tomorrow, it's our show. From 10 till noon, on stage at the Santa Fe Opera. Everyone is invited to come out to the opera. It's a whole family event. And actually get on the stage. It's a stage tour open house. And the set for the Grand Duchess of Gerolstein will be on stage, including a handmade 20-foot-long vintage 1920s car. And you can walk through the set and meet the people who've made it and see the props and costumes. And it's free, and you can come and go as you wish. It's all at the Santa Fe Opera, santafeopera.org.
Neato.
Yeah.
Hey, I got a surprise for you.
Yes?
I have a dog of the week.
Yay! Yeah.
I do. This is a pet of the week that's available through the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society. Suki is a female. She's 6 years old, but she only weighs 47 pounds. And she's gorgeous. She's white. She looks like she might have a little pit bull in her, but don't let that dissuade you.
Oh, no.
She was hit by a car, and that's how she ended up there. But with some rehab there at the shelter and the Bounce Back Integrative Veterinary Rehabilitation Center, she's able to walk, and she's getting better every day. And she needs a home.
The little doggy needs a home.
She needs
a home.
And
she's super cute.
She is super cute.
White and has a snout love eyeball cute ear thing.
Yeah. She's very, I mean, she's got one of those heart-melting faces.
She really does.
There's also Little Girl and Chunks, which are two...
Chunks?
Karen, Little Girl and Chunks, which are two Cairn Terriers. And let's see, there's a little girl. Oh, no, they're both 7 years old. And they've been together their entire lives as siblings.
So we want to adopt them together kind of thing?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, I'm looking for a dog, and the six-year mark is about perfect for me, but I'm just...
Are you going to snap up Suki?
I wish I could, but it's just not quite time yet.
Oh.
You know? I mean, there never really is a right time, but, you know, we need to make sure that there's two of us in the house so that poor doggy gets love and attention.
Yeah.
You know? So...
Santa Fe Animal Shelter.
And
you can find it, and Humane Society. You can find it on the web at sfhumane.org.
Yes.
And what about the cat of the week?
Meow.
This cat, this week's featured cat, and this is called Speaking of the Arts, but it's also Speaking of the Animals.
Yes.
This featured cat of the week is Jessie, who is a purebred Bengal. She's shy at first, and she's adjusting to having lost the only home she has ever known. She would be happiest in a home with no other dogs and cats. And she's maybe 3 years old or so. And if you're interested in adopting her, please call 316-2281 for more information. Or askfelinesandfriends@yahoo.com is the email address.
Awesome. Yep. Okay, we got the dogs out of the way.
Actually, we don't.
Cats. Oh, no?
We have a dog of the week, too.
Awesome. Bring it.
Okay, Dewpaws Rescue, two dogs. Willow is an engaging young Chihuahua female, black and tan, with huge and very cute ears, and she's friendly and polite and likes to play with other dogs. And Tomato is a small, fuzzy, gray and white terrier male, still a young dog, who's playful and sweet, and they will both be at Petco this Saturday with a bunch of other little dogs for adoption.
Sweet.
Yep.
Okay.
There we have it.
Animals out of the way.
Yep.
Right? Okay.
I think so.
Hey, this is going to be cool. This is today. The New Mexico School for the Arts is presenting its year-end gala, Art Spring 2013, and it's kind of a mobile party. It goes from place to place. It starts at the Georgia O'Keeffe Education Annex with an exhibit of artwork by NMSA students. I think there's 58 students that contributed work to this exhibit.
Wow.
So that's going to be pretty cool. That's at 5:30. No, that's at 5. And then at 5:30, there's a wine and hors d'oeuvre reception at the El Dorado Hotel and Spa. And then at 7 p.m., head over to the Lenzic, and there's the dance, theater, and music students are going to perform. I believe some of the dance students, the dance instructor got it cleared to do some
A big
some
ballet, Serenade by Balanchine, which is one of the most beautiful ballets in the history of the universe.
So I don't think they're doing the whole thing, but
they're doing the first movement.
Yeah, first movement.
That's a major ballet. I'm gonna even if I don't go for the whole thing, I'm gonna go for that first movement. It's the first thing they're doing is that ballet.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Cool beans. Anyway, tickets can be pricey, but it's worth it. It's the Mexico School for the Arts. These students are very talented. Their teachers are very talented. Cool prizes for the auction. You can go to Shirley MacLaine's house and get drunk with her and have conversation. You can get a trip to Paris at the auction too. So
you can get drunk with her?
Well, it's Cocktails with Shirley MacLaine.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I guess I'm speaking for myself.
Ah.
if you call 988-1234 or go to ticketsantafe.org, you can find tickets. And all proceeds are going towards scholarships at the school.
Excellent.
So that's a good thing. If you want more info, call 982-6124 on that one there.
And the Zia Singers will be doing a concert this Sunday, the 12th of May at 4 o'clock at the Elks Lodge at 1615 Old Pecos Trail. And it'll be their dessert concert and features pop and show tunes accompanied by a wealth of delicious goodies with coffee and tea.
Wow.
Mm.
Food everywhere.
Zia Singers. Yeah, no, it's good stuff.
Food everywhere this year. Hey, Pat Oliphant is having a, you know Pat. Don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah.
Wonderful
cartoonist.
Wonderful cartoonist. He's having a show at Gerald Peters Gallery. There's a reception from 5 to 7 tonight. The show is called Selections from Rome and Other Works. Cartoons, sculpture, monotypes, drawings. The show's up through June 8th, and there is a story on page 36. And Pat's work also dons the cover of Positempo.
The cover of Positempo is gorgeous today.
It is gorgos. It's gorgos. You can also see it online at positempomagazine.com.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so awesome. Four Voices, High Desert Poets Read, and it's Marie Aragon, Judy Mosher, Marmika Paskowitz, and Elizabeth O'Brien on Thursday of next week at 6:30 at La Tienda Performance Space in El Dorado. For more information, 466-4207.
Sweet. Silver Sun Gallery is having a show, Changing Seasons, Landscapes of the West. If you're into Landscapes of the West, work by Lee McLeod through June 5th. There's a reception tonight from 4:30 to 7:30, and that's over there at 656 Canyon Road. Winter Out is having a great show, Thaw, Glass Reimagined, Glass Sculpture by Karen Bexfield. And there's a reception tonight from 5 to 7 p.m. That's at 701 Canyon Road. Canyon Road looks busy today.
Yeah, well, and it'll be a beautiful day to go up there with the springtime and the neither hot nor cold weather. And
yeah, it's supposed to be 61 today. That's
61,
yeah.
All right.
That's fair.
So let's see, the Dragonfly School is having a spring fair tomorrow from 10 to 2, booths and activities for kids and a silent auction for adults. One of the kids is a magician. There is a worm dig. There is paint, a rock, and manicures, and a kind of catapult involving dirt balls and mask making.
What?
And then there's, I'm not kidding, there's chicken bingo. I don't know what that is, but you can find out by going to the Dragonfly School Fair tomorrow.
It's not cruel, trust me.
No, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
And a silent auction with restaurant meals and massages and all kinds of good things. And pizza from Pizza Centro. That's a nice place, the Dragonfly School.
Yes, it is.
Especially with the dirt catapults.
I want one now.
I know. I don't know what they are.
Somebody send me some plans for a dirt catapult.
Excellent.
I must has. Okay. There's a bunch of music stuff going on that I wrote about in my Soundwaves column. I'll mention a few, okay? Bill Palmer and Stephanie Hatfield, married musicians, lovely people, and a couple of bands, including the TV Killers, who are having a CD release party on Saturday, May 11th, out there in Madrid at the
Mineshaft Tavern.
And it's going to be an awesome show. There's a small cover at the door. The album's going to be available for purchase out there. If you drive, drive safe. Also, this is awesome. I love rockabilly. Psychobilly, especially.
Psychobilly. Did you make up psychobilly?
Nope. I've heard all kinds of weird billy terms lately. Brundlebilly, psychobilly, rockabilly. Anyway, Dead Bundy and the Neats. Yeah. Are you with me?
I'm following
They're
you.
They're from Minnesota.
All right.
Yeah. And they're going to be playing at the Cowgirl on Wednesday, May 15th. And that's going to be a cool show. I'm not sure if Cowgirl is really prepared for the wild show that this can be.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to be there on Wednesday.
Being one of the wild followers.
Yes. I have no bouffant. I have no tattoos. I have no, you know, I'm not one of those guys or girls, but I love rockabilly.
All right.
So that's going to be a really fun show. They have a new album out called Train to Paradise. That's what they're touring on. Show starts at 8. It's 21 and older. There ain't no cover.
All right.
That's going to be fun. What else?
Here's some things happening at Collected Works over the next few days. Journey Santa Fe presents community organizer Kathleen Dudley on Sunday at 11 in the morning in conversation on the New Mexico Coalition for Community Rights, Drilling Mora County, and Democracy Schools. She is an amazing community organizer based up in Mora County, and they're talking about all kinds of ways that they really are looking for self-governance for beautiful Mora County, and they're against drilling and fracking and mining and modified crops and all those kinds of things. So They will be there on Sunday morning at 11. Journey Santa Fe does great programs. They do them every week. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then Monday at 6 o'clock, David Morrell's latest book is called Murder as a Fine Art. He's the author of 32 books, including First Blood. And that was a novel about which they, on basis of which they made the film Rambo. And
Rambo 2 and Rambo 3.
Yes. Not to be confused with Rocky 2 and Rocky. Okay, so Murder as a Fine Art is set in gaslit London. Tuesday at 6 o'clock, Ramona Ossebel's latest book is called A Guide to Being Born, which I read a whole lot of last night. I'm going to be interviewing her next week, I think on Monday, and she is a young literary talent, and this is a book of her short stories. And then on Thursday, Demetria Martinez's latest book is called The Block Captain's Daughter, and I'm hoping to get her on the air, too. It was a finalist for the International Latino Book Award in Fiction. So all of that is happening at Collected Works Bookstore, which is in Santa Fe on the corner of Galisteo and Water.
I had the pleasure of interviewing David, and there's a story in today's Positium, but what a great guy.
He's a great guy.
So passionate. I'll leak a little bit from the story, and that is that he rarely does sequels. I mean, Rambo is one of the only ones that he's done sequels to,
mm-hmm.
or First Blood, excuse me. And he liked the character in the book so much, Murder is a Fine Art, that he's almost wrapping up his first draft of this manuscript for the follow-up.
Nice.
And it might even be a trilogy, so that's going to be cool. It's a really, really good book. It can get gory at times, but it's very well written. Yeah.
Yeah. When you're reading the gory part of a book, do you get scared?
No, gore doesn't scare me.
Do you get book? Did you get scared reading any books?
No.
I sometimes read, and I get so scared that I have to put the thing down.
All the President's
walk around
men
the house.
Scared the bejesus out of me.
Yeah.
But that's for different reasons.
Right.
Yeah.
The Taos Community Chorus, Spring 2013 season. Tomorrow they are having a concert. It's a tribute to African-American spirituals at the First Presbyterian Church in Taos. And then Sunday at San Francisco de Assis at Rancho de Taos. For more information, you can call 575-776-3998. That's the Taos Community Chorus.
Neato. Hey, Megan Chandler is a local singer-songwriter, and she's having a CD release party for her, I believe it's a debut album called Sensual. And it's at 8 p.m. on Saturday at High Mayhem Emerging Arts Studio over there on Siler Lane. It's going to be a fun show, and the CDs are going to be available there. And you kind of get like a little bit off the ticket price if you buy the CD. That's how it works.
Excellent.
Yeah. But it's weird. It's like a combination of jazz, and she's just got an incredible voice. It's gonna be a fun show.
Excellent.
So go check it out.
The Mother's Day Historic House Tour. The Historic Santa Fe Foundation will host this tour on Sunday, the 12th of May, from 1 to 4. Tickets and maps will be available at any of the 4 featured houses during the event. And there's the Tudusky House and Garden on East DeVargas, and the foyer of the old library on Washington Avenue, and a couple of other houses. So for more information, historicsantafe.org.
Hey, when we were talking about animals, did we mention the Kindred Spirits Animal Sanctuary open house?
Oh, no, go for it.
Okay. Kindred Spirits Animal Sanctuary open house. It's a fundraising event. It's from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. out there in New Mexico 14, south of Santa Fe. Kindred Spirits is a great place, and it's
fabulous.
It's a great organization.
Yep.
Those poor old little animals, that don't got nowhere to go, and they're old.
It's a kind of a hospice and just community center for animals. They live there. They live out their lives. They're wonderful animals.
Yes.
Most of them aren't adoptable, although I know somebody who adopted an animal from there. They didn't think it was adoptable because it had a shattered leg, and she just fell in love with it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
But anyway, that's going to be fun, and that's happening tomorrow.
And that's way down Route 14. Not even that far down Route 14.
Yeah.
You just go down Route 14, and it'll be on your right.
Yes.
After a while.
After a while. That's the right. Just get on down there for a little while and be there on your right. That's what it says on the map, too.
Yep. opening this Friday, that means today, at The Screen, which is the wonderful movie theater on the campus of the Santa Fe University of Art and Design, Free the Mind, the Study of the Science Behind Meditation. And that is a documentary that is opening today, full of brain scientists and all kinds of things. And what else is happening? Andre Gregory, Before and After Dinner, the story of the multifaceted artist Andre Gregory. And, of course, La Boheme is happening on Sunday from the Royal Opera. It's one of those HD, I think they're live. Are they live? Anyway, there's those HD operas. And then a film called No Place on Earth, which is some kind of a war movie. And Koch, the story of New York Mayor Ed Koch. So lots of good things over at The Screen.
Lots of good things at The Screen. CCA's got The Angel Share, which is a really funny movie. Have you seen it?
No.
Okay. It's Paul Laverty and Ken Loach. They work together on The Wind That Shakes the Barley, My Name is Joe, Sweet 16, Root Irish. So, you know, they're UK filmmakers. And a lot of their work is serious, but The Angel's Share is this wonderful caper film that has to do with whiskey. And I won't say much else. You can read the review in today's Positempo, as well as a review of
Whiskeys for Drinking,
Andre Gregory, Before and After Dinner by Mr. Jonathan Richards.
Okay. Is that like the My Dinner with Andre?
Yes.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Excellent. That's one I want to see. I saw It's a Disaster, which was getting a lot of buzz.
Was it good?
It's okay, yeah. I mean, it's good. I gave it 2 out of 4 chilies, and that's also at CCA.
Isn't that the one where some people realize they've got 10 minutes left to live, and they're all having dinner together or something like that?
Well, it's kind of like a couple's brunch, and they're all getting together, and everyone kind of has a secret. And one of them has a very intense secret. But in the meantime, while they're sitting down and trying to get their quiche on, somebody sets off a bunch of dirty bombs in downtown L.A., so they're kind of trapped inside this house.
Oh, okay.
As Robert Knott would say, antics ensue. and it's a quirky, it's an oddball film. So it's worth
it. I like the setup of it.
Yeah, no, it's a great setup. It's just not hashed out very well, but it's funny.
All right.
So, and that's also at CCA.
And did you know that tomorrow is El Día de la Gente? It's the 20th annual Community Day, and they put unity in capital letters, on Saturday at the plaza, and among other things, residential recycling bins will be available.
Mmm. I'm saying because that's good, and I also smell bacon, which is also good.
There is bacon cooking in the Santa Fe Bacon Company.
Yes. But they have vegetarian items, too, if you don't eat bacon.
They do.
Which means more bacon for me.
I usually order them and then with a side of bacon.
Do you have a vegetarian omelet? I'll take that. Could I have a pound of sausage and a Diet Coke?
I know. It's like, I'll have the garden burger with bacon and cheese.
I've done that before.
I have, too.
I've gone to a fast food restaurant, I won't say which one, and ordered a bacon cheeseburger without the beef. Just the bacon and the cheese.
That's...
And lettuce and tomato. It's like a BLT with cheese.
Right. But it only cost you $1.50.
Yeah, exactly. They tried to charge me more, and I was like, don't work like that. It's not like it's fat-free, organic.
Don't think about the pork factory.
No. No, I won't. I won't. What else is happening?
Well, Scott Jarrett tomorrow night
is
playing at Gig Performance Space, and he is a musician of some kind, but it doesn't say what instrument he plays. Do you know anything about him?
Nuh-uh.
Okay, let's see.
Not a darn thing.
Here's what they've told us. Scott Jarrett's music is lyrically evocative and musically surprising, with a knack for creating melodic and rhythmic tapestries. He's been in this business since the 1970s. His first album, Without Rhyme or Reason, was recorded in New York City. And he's played with some of the greatest musicians like Dave Grusin, Marcus Miller, Eddie Gomez, Ralph McDonald, Keith Jarrett. Oh, he's the brother of Keith Jarrett. Anyway, so that's happening tomorrow night at Gig Performance Space on 2nd Street.
Neato. Hey, you like fashion?
Not particularly.
Well, you wear clothes, so this might be of interest to you. Fashion Showcase. She's not wearing clothes right now, but that's a totally different story. Fashion Showcase 2013 on Thursday the 16th. Santa Fe Community College's student fashion show at 6:30. Doors open at 6 at the Hames Room at Santa Fe Community College out there on Richards Avenue. There's a small fee to get in. Discounts for youth, are available. You can call 428-1358 for more information. I like fashion.
I like my cousin Vinny.
Okay. I like turtles.
An Affair with the Muse, the grand opening of Kristen Johnson Fine Art in Santa Fe, a collection of world-renowned artists and local talents, and a benefit for the Santa Fe Symphony with garden music performed by members of the symphony. And the reception is today from 5:30 to 7:30, and that is right across from La Posada Hotel, 323 East Palace Avenue. For more information, KJFA Gallery. Kristen Johnson Fine Art Gallery. .com.
.com. There's some theater.
Theater.
We've got the. Did we talk about NDI's Eureka?
No.
National Dance Institute. Eureka Science Themed Student Showcase. 5 and 7 p.m. on Friday at the Dance Barns. That's going to be cool. Tonight, let's see, we've got Hansel and Gretel at the Santa Fe Playhouse Children's Theater Productions presents the musical at 7 p.m. today and Saturday over there at the Playhouse on DeVargas Street. And we've got Willy Wonka Jr., Pandemonium Productions, performed by local students aged... Oh, no, we already talked about that, didn't we?
I think so.
I
don't remember. Hey, KSFR is seeking gently used books, CDs, vinyl records, DVDs, sheet music from now through the 26th of July in preparation for the KSFR annual book and media sale, which is going to be in early August at the Santa Fe Community College. So for more information on where to drop stuff off, you can call 428-1527.
Neato.
Yep.
Hey, can I pimp myself real quick?
Mm-hmm.
At 7 p.m. on Monday the 13th of May, Santa Fe and Abiquiu and other places in New Mexico are going to be featured in a show called Burgerland on the Travel Channel.
Features me.
We go to the Bobcat Bite and Bodie's General Store.
Oh, that's awesome.
And, you know, there's some sad news about Bobcat Bite.
I know. They're apparently closing. But
well,
I
they're
think
losing their lease. We don't know if that's really going to close, but they're not going to stay there.
Oh, okay. Well, we hope that they open up even closer into town because they're fabulous. Not only fabulous burgers, but really great people.
Yes. Wonderful people.
Wonderful people.
I'm going to miss that place so much.
Hey, Tuesday, the 14th of May, I got a note called Save Taos. We need your help in stopping the El Prado Family Dollar. They're, I guess they want to take some paved paradise and put up a parking lot. But there's a hearing on Tuesday, the 14th of May, parking lot with a Family Dollar in. So you can go make your voice heard at the Taos County Commissioner's Chambers. The hearing starts at 1 p.m. It says, please bring your friends for more information. 575-770-3377. A lot of those battles being fought on the local level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It killed the general store in Pecos, so
it can be done.
Yes, it can be done.
And the Santa Fe Master Gardener Association is launching a free series of gardening workshops on May 11th. And that's tomorrow. It's called Let's Grow, a free gardening series with composting basics and all kinds of things. It's at drop in between 9 and 11 at the county fairgrounds, and future classes will be every second Saturday. For more information, Santa Fe Master Gardeners. It's sfmga.org.
Neato.
Rob DeWalt is with the Pasatiempo, Friday Arts Magazine in the Santa Fe New Mexican, and he's with us many Fridays speaking of the arts, and it's just wonderful having you here.
It's wonderful being here.
Yay.
Again.
Thank
it's fun.
You. It is always fun, and we got through most of our announcements. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, I think. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. My email is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Please write anytime. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. After that, Jazz Etc. with Helga Ancona. And what you doing this weekend?
What am I doing this weekend? I am helping some friends look for, I'm looking for an upright piano. If anyone knows of a nice upright piano for sale, let me know.
Ah, okay.
Rob
DeWalt can be reached at the Santa Fe, New Mexican Paso Tiempo.
Right. Or on Facebook.
All right. On Facebook. Just about time to go. News is coming up. Have a wonderful weekend.
Everyone enjoy Mother's Day as well.
Ah, happy Mother's Day. Hasta la vista.